John Harvey of the Commonwealth of Virginia, actively involved now in Veterans and Defense Affairs for the governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, is my guest, taking a look at Workforce 2025 in the federal government. John, it's terrific to talk to you, and you're uniquely qualified, I think, to talk about the nexus of the civilian and military workforce that will serve the United States well in 2025, a decade from now. What are some of the tools that are available to both the civilian and uniform leaders in the military to plan what their workforces will look like in 2025 and how those workforces will work together in communion in the coming decade? Thanks for joining me, sir.
Yeah, Francis, it's a privilege to be with you. You know, that question really got me thinking. And as I reflected back on my experiences both in the Navy and then since I've left Navy and now working for the governor here in Richmond, I've been struck by how much the individual services and the Department of Defense have to get after military force planning. They have these very large recruiting commands, have large structures in their headquarters that map out what the force should look like and how we're going to find those men and women, how we're going to train them, how we're going to retain them, and then deploy them throughout a career. And I've been struck by the absence of a similar process on the civilian workforce. You know, we pay for most of our civilian workforce, you know, just out of operations and maintenance funds and all the services. Whereas for the military side, you have a designated account, the MP, whether it's MPN for Navy or MPA F for Air Force, and you have a structure that follows that individual soldier, sailor, airman, marine through that whole career. There's nothing like that I've found for the civilian workforce. It's almost just sort of left to chance, if you will. And so I would love to see us come up with an organization. Maybe it's in the Office of Personnel Management. Maybe it's within the separate cabinet departments that focuses so much more on who do we need for what we're going to be doing in 5, 10, 15 years. How do we find those people? How do we keep those people with us over time? And what's the manner in which you compensate them that's changed so much today than what it was in the classic? We still do it the way we did in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. So no business would stay in business that way. I think the compare and contrast on your military side and your civilian workforce side is striking. And we could do so much better, I think, on the civilian side.
Is it a natural transition? Is it what I mean by that? Would it be logical for the civilian leadership at the Pentagon and for the same their peers in the other civilian agencies to just take it the way that the branches of the military do it and transfer it? Or is it just the concept, the framework maybe, that would be replicable?
I think you start with the framework and sort of, because it's going to be very unique, you know, what elements of the Department of Health and Human Services needs are going to be very different than what elements of the Department of Defense are going to be. But I think a common framework would be extraordinarily beneficial for making sure you're actively recruiting. I mean, when's the last time you saw an office out there? Like, we have a military recruiting office. When's the last time you saw an office that's just focused on recruiting for the federal government? How do we do that in an organized manner to get the right people we need at the right time? So I think I'd start with the framework and try to build onto it to meet the unique needs that Homeland Security has, that Department of Labor would have, or the Department of Defense. But I think a common framework would be very beneficial.
So that concept then, and you mentioned DHS, and I think of primarily of law enforcement and the Coast Guard, and I probably shouldn't, but when I think of DHS, I go to comments and conversations that you and I have had in the past about readiness. You asked the question very eloquently, I think, at one time, ready for what? And that's a question that is still important today, I believe, as the Pentagon looks at force size reductions in all of the branches and so on. But it seems to me that what you're suggesting about a framework existing would go a long way toward answering the ready for what question at every single agency.
Oh, I think so. Particularly a place like Homeland Security, where what you have 22 distinct entities within that overarching framework, which is just an extremely challenging management leadership problem. a framework, a common framework, I think would be very, very helpful. And for instance, at Department of Commerce, if you look at the agencies, I think there are like 11 or 12 distinct agencies within the Department of Commerce, and
yes.
yet what they do, very, very different skill sets are required, very different levels of seniority would be required. How do you find them? How do you bring them up through the – who do you bring up through the ranks? So I've just been struck that we just don't seem to pay much attention to this at the civilian workforce level, and I think it is the key issue we face in government writ large for the future. You try to get to the future in a coherent manner. Who's your workforce? And a huge issue down here in Virginia is workforce development, and I think that needs to be a much more important part of the discussion elsewhere.
John Harvey is Secretary of Veterans and Defense Affairs for the Commonwealth of Virginia and former commander of U.S. Fleet Forces Command, United States Navy. Admiral, the workforce planning issues that we've talked about are not peculiar to one agency or one branch of the military or any of that. Something that is peculiar to the Defense Department right now is the results that Secretary Carter and his colleagues are reviewing of the Military Compensation Commission and all the recommendations that they've made. We've already seen the House of Representatives looking at approving changes to the retirement plan under which men and women who serve for less than 20 years will have access to. Would a commission for the civilian workforce make sense in your mind, or is that maybe putting the cart before the horse when we think about some of the bigger challenges that workforce leaders face?
Francis, I think you've nailed it. I think an equivalent commission for the civilian workforce would be enormously beneficial. That could get at the framework, perhaps, of how you compensate and how you structure a career that is where so many different skill sets are demanded across so many different agencies. I've stayed in close touch with the Military Compensation and Retirement Modernization Commission work as it developed their preliminary reports and their final. I think it's was great, great work. And sometimes this town can surprise you. I didn't think that what the findings they came up with was on a timeline that would enable this rapid engagement with the Congress that leads to something that the House Armed Services Committee has put into their marks on the budget. So it was very fascinating to see it move that fast, have that kind of impact. Now, regarding the specifics, I think there's a lot more discussion to be had, but I think that the idea that they could put this compensation committee together, move it, do really good work, come up with these very, very sound recommendations, and then do the necessary work in the political process to turn those into reality. That, to me, is a great model to be used for our civilian workforce as well.
One of the holdups that we've run into as we have explored this special report this week, the reverse retirement wave, and all the resources for that are at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, is the idea of all the political issues that have gone on in the past couple of years. People are hesitant to retire because they're not sure exactly what the deal will be when it is time for them to retire. And so it strikes me that some type of civilian comp commission might be a way to put people's minds at ease when civilian leaders have an idea of exactly what their workforce is likely to do because they know what the package is going to be moving forward. They'll probably be able to make better decisions about how their workforces will look a decade from now.
Well, I agree with you because I think there's so much uncertainty regarding the fundamentals. I mean, we're still facing, it's on the books as law, federal law, sequestration, if the budget's enacted above the caps. Well, that would imply immediately, just like it did last time, some type of furlough. And so there's so much uncertainty that at the very big end, very disruptive end, but also what's my retirement going to look like? How could that change? How are they going to compensate me over the course of my career? And, you know, what's the impact on Social Security going to be, particularly for the way the relationship is now with the federal workforce? So there's so much that you rightly characterize as uncertainty. And I think we need to take that out in order to recruit the kind of people you need who will say, I'm willing to commit to this type of career because the work can be so rewarding. And there's a certain level of the way I'm compensated and the structure of that makes it worthwhile for me to commit to this federal government as my place to make my contribution to our society. And so I think some kind of structure is essential, and we haven't got it now.
Admiral, those are all the questions I have for you. I'm always grateful for your time and your insight. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, Francis, always a pleasure.